With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to Monday. I hope you're, I hope you had a great weekend. This was Orthodox Easter, and quite frankly, it was a needed break and a good weekend. Now, we're going to have Dr. Kirk Moore on after the break, and Dr. Moore is a surgeon from Utah who gave vaccination cards to his patients without giving them the COVID vaccine, and he got into a lot of trouble for it. His story is very important because this is someone that put his patriotism and love for people above his own welfare. He's actually been subpoenaed for this, and he's gone to court. And if there, you know, I would never even thought of such a crime, but there's something called vaccine fraud, if you can believe it. And he's being charged with sowing, believe it or not, sowing unbelief among general population, that, you know, showing mistrust for the government among the general population, which is just honestly crazy. Now, I want to start the big story at the top of the hour is that Janet Yellen is under fire right now for proposing a bank spy plan for the Biden administration. Now, this came up in around September, October 2021, Biden's first year. And what they're proposing to do is every transaction over $600 has to be reported. So we're looking at a big switch. This is a part of the switch to digital currency. And this is going to, the actual methodology is coming out of Ukraine, believe it or not. Yeah, okay. Now, what Yellen is proposing is that, well, everyone that makes over $400,000 is going to have to account for any spending from their own bank accounts of $600 or more. Okay, well, this actually doesn't affect just people that are making $400,000. And even if it did, this is very, very bad. So if we're starting control, federal control at $600 transactions, now, Europe is already demanding, they're already of their own people, every transaction over 1,000 euros, okay, has to be reported. And if with your own money, you pay cash for something over 1,000 euros, you can go to jail. Well, Joe Biden's gone one better at 600. I mean, don't you think? Now, what does this actually mean? So you have a bank account, your kid needs something, and, you know, it's just easier to pay cash, you can't do it. Or let's say your child needs a loan, okay, you know, $800, $1,000 or whatever for school. You just can't pull money out of your account or write them a check or whatever. The U.S. government has to be notified of what you did with your money. Now, this is the first step in controlling what you cannot and cannot buy, what you can and cannot purchase, and actually in this particular timeline, if you're giving money, donating money politically, and it's not going to the powers that be already in office, they might come after your money. It identifies you as an enemy, spending your own money, and this is money you've already paid taxes on. That's what makes it crazy. Now, Senator Joe Manchin, and it was Joe Manchin, Tim Scott, and a few others. This is bipartisan, and they're standing up against the Biden administration on this. And this needs to be bipartisan, because this is crazy drunk guy driving a car now. After they control your bank account, what's left? What is left? You're not in control of anything anymore. So, pressing forward, if the woke machine isn't geared up and runs over everybody with common sense in Congress, this isn't going to get anywhere. Not right now. But keep in mind, it's already gotten there in Europe. And this is just another thing that's being pioneered in good old Ukraine. The Center of Human Rights and Dignity for the 21st century. And there we go. We're going to roll to a quick break. When we get back, we're going to have Dede Denslow with the news. So hold on to your hats.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with TNT talk show host and producer extraordinaire Dede Denslow. Dede, what's going on in the news today? Big news from Africa, yes?
Yeah, I've come with the story from Sudan, another place known for its upstanding human rights. There has been clashes in the capital there in Sudan over the weekend in Khartoum. On Saturday, clashes broke out in the capital, Khartoum, and other cities between the SAF, which are the Sudanese Armed Forces, and the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, which are a group of militant types, an independent security branch and roots in pro-government militias. That's what they are. Each side has accused the other of starting hostilities while making conflicting claims on their games. And the exact power balance on the ground remains unclear, with the international community in unison calling for a ceasefire and negotiations. There has been chaotic scenes in Khartoum and in and around the capital. There have been fighting with tanks, mounted machine guns, artillery, warplane, all in this densely populated area, which is actually unprecedented in Sudan, who throughout their long history or histories of civil war, much of the fighting often takes in the more remote tribal areas of the country. At least 83 people have been killed and over 1,126 people injured in these clashes. The World Health Organization Sunday evening warned of a looming healthcare crisis. Of course they did. And have urged the SAF and the RSF to try and restrict their fighting and allow access to hospitals and other facilities. The UN World Food Program has also halted its own operations in the country after three of its employees were killed and two more were injured. The warring sides agreed to a brief humanitarian pause on Sunday afternoon, but both maintained the right to respond to any in the event of any transgressions, and minor fighting has continued there in Sudan, in around the capital, George. I'm not sure how much you know about the internal struggles of Sudan.
Next to nothing.
I'll give a little brief synopsis because I know just a little bit more than next to nothing. It's not something that I hear about in the news or see on social media. But in 2019, Omar al-Bashir, Sudan's ruler of more than 25 years, was overthrown in a coup. The country has since been governed by a transitional sovereignty council that was briefly dissolved and reinstated in the wake of another coup in 2021. Its president and de facto ruler of the nation is the Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and his deputy commander, but who is in charge of a sort of a competing military force, the RSF, is a guy called General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemedti. Over the weekend, these two had a falling out over power sharing. I think there was some deal in the offing about returning some semblance of democracy back to the country. They fell out, and then they're opposing, backing militaries, militia, terrorist types, freedom fighters. They have been fighting ever since over the weekend. So that's a sort of synopsis of the political status of the country. It is almost, you could say, just jumping from one coup to one conflict, to one coup, to a civil war, one after the other, George.
Jeez. And it doesn't sound like it's going to end anytime soon, does it?
No. I think these sort of internal squabbles just continue for decades and decades. And then they just take tangents to other squabbles. And for as long as I can remember, when I do hear about Sudan in the news, there is some sort of internal conflict, fighting going on in that country. And that's my whole life, mm-hmm. as far as I can remember.
Yeah, same here. I just, so Sudan isn't something that comes across my plate very often. It's unfortunate, but it's, a reality. A lot of it has to do with where I'm located.
Uh-huh.
And you only have so much attention for so many things, especially, hard things like this. And it's just a shame that, it's going on.
And, there's no real, you think about all the support, for example, that Ukraine is receiving from the West, or all the support, the Saudi Arabian government is receiving from the West for their conflicts. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that that's a positive thing, but we don't see any real assistance. We've got the World Food Programme and the WHO have both chipped in to say, you need to stop fighting. But you don't see any sort of real concerted diplomatic effort for major governments around the world focused on places like Sudan or Somalia is another country that you hear about with the internal conflict and civil wars that are going on there. We're not interested because there's no benefit to us, and therefore it doesn't come across our plate, George.
It's exactly, it's unfortunate, but it's exactly right. Africa, in the last century had mass genocides going on. Uh-huh. A couple of them. And, the murders got up over 300,000 and no government in the world was moving on that. No government, because of what you said. No one had any stake in it. No one had any anything to be gained by it, by helping these people, which was a shame. It says quite a lot for the morality of our leaders at times, ignoring these things. But
wait till they strike oil. Wait till they strike oil in Sudan and go, look, we've just found, a trillion barrels of oil deposited under our ground. Then I'm sure there'll be some form of democratic intervention by the West in Sudan, George.
Well, I actually think that at this point, if they're looking for places to stick solar panels or windmills and things like that. So don't count them out yet.
The whole region in solar panels. Actually, I think you only need an area the size of like a small US state. I was going to say Texas, but that's quite big. Utah, sorry, that's probably quite big as well. I'm just showing up my geography. And covering an area that size with solar panels, and apparently that should be just enough with current technology to provide the entire Earth with energy. Why I chucked that in, I blame you, George, for mentioning Sudan and solar panels in the same sentence. Maybe that's what we could do there, and then Sudan would have a use to the West.
Oh, believe it or not, before the war, that's what they were going to do to Southwest Ukraine.
Really?
And South Central Ukraine. They were going to cover it with solar panels and wind farms, as well as, hydrogen production.
Ah.
which is, yeah, make it the big solar farm for Germany, for Europe. That was what they were counting on doing and getting away from Russian fuel that way. So, you know, the other option was Africa, but, you know, I guess we'll see how that goes.
They're too busy fighting amongst each other at the moment. I mean, there is a downside, you know, to places like my country with these internal conflicts that poor African countries have. And that is a lot of people get displaced. And these people make right. their way into Europe, through Europe. And they, you know, we have a lot, we have a large Sudanese population in the UK, I suspect. Not percentage wise of the overall population, but it just in numbers. There's probably a lot of displaced Sudanese who end up on our shores.
All right. Darren, thanks for coming on today. I look forward to your report tomorrow. All right. Have a great evening.
And you, man.
Now, are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab or Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
An asylum seeker has been charged with sexually assaulting a female in a local bar. He forced himself on a woman. She tried to shove him off. He then grabbed her breast, forced himself on her, and kissed her. This was all captured on CCTV, to which he replied, "What's the problem? What's the problem? What did I do wrong? Genuinely, what did I do wrong?" And there's someone representing him in court saying, "I really hope this doesn't harm his application for asylum, because, you know, he's been here for 2 years and we haven't had any reports of any bad behavior up until now." Yeah, thankfully it was caught on CCTV camera because he couldn't restrain himself. He decided to molest a woman in a bar when he was on CCTV. God only knows what other stuff is being gotten up to off camera. To which he replied, and I quote from the story, DerryNow.com, "What was the problem? I don't see what I did wrong. Herein lieth the problem."
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
If you're talking about it,
our children are not guinea pigs for science experimentation.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. Now, we've got a very interesting guy coming on. We have Dr. Kirk Moore. He's a surgeon from Utah who's been accused of vaccine fraud and sowing mistrust with the government because he gave vaccine cards to his patients without giving them the COVID vaccine. Now, in hindsight, we can see this as heroic. This was the right thing to do. Dr. Moore, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's go back to the beginning, because not all of our listeners are going to be familiar with your story. How did this start? Now, the COVID outbreak happened. They started going light speed to make vaccines. When did the spidey sense start tingling on this one?
My spidey sense has been open since 1989 when I had a vaccine injury, small vaccine injury. I got shingles from a hepatitis B vaccine when I started medical school. So my spidey sense regarding vaccines was always, has always been up there. And initially this wasn't about vaccines. Initially this was about treatment, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to flatten the curve, shut down businesses to keep, people safe, keep grandma safe, all that stuff. I shut down my office about a week before the government shut ours down here in Utah. Within that time frame, the time that I shut my office down and the governor shut us down, I had completely flip-flopped. And I was just like, this is a bunch of crap. We just need to go on with life as normal. This is no big deal. And then it just accelerated from there with lack of treatment. We don't treat you, just go home till your lips are blue, call an ambulance, then we'll try to save your life when you show up in the emergency room. And then perpetuated from there with taking certain medications off the market by bashing medications that had been on the market for 40 years with ivermectin, 70 years with hydroxychloroquine that I had prescribed on three separate humanitarian trips to Africa back in the 20-teens. And it just, it was just a crazy, crazy narrative, and it kept getting crazier. Fauci's on TV saying no masks, they don't work. And then a week later, masks work, make sure you wear one. And then it was two masks, then it's three masks. And then monoclonal antibodies, it's the best thing since sliced bread. No, don't use them. Or you can only use them in this person, or, if you're not at high risk, then you can't use them at all. Then they started taking those off the market. And then you had whispers of Remdesivir, this medication that was coming out that was going to be the panacea to solve all panaceas. And in the meantime, you're kind of hearing in the background that nothing is going to get back to normal until we have a vaccine. So it was just a total conglomeration, and everything funneled to me just seeing that the whole thing was just fake to begin with.
Now, you're a surgeon, a doctor. Have you ever heard... Have you ever seen anything like this in the 20 years that you've been practicing?
No, I don't think I'd ever been to the CDC website until 2020. I graduated from medical school in 93. I never looked to the government, never looked at public officials to tell me how to take care of my patients. I was never told by public officials how to take care of my patients until 2020. Mm-hmm. I was always looking to my colleagues, looking to my mentors, looking to my training, going to my textbooks, looking to my journal articles, and then just kind of reflecting in my own experiences. So to have this happen and to again look at it all in this context was just astounding to me. The biggest thing for me at the time was the fact that we weren't treating people. In other words, right. People coming in with flu-like symptoms. And a year prior to that, or in November of 2019, somebody comes in with the flu, you're treating them. You're giving them Flumidine. You're writing them a prescription for some other medication, maybe an antibiotic if they have a superimposed pneumonia. You're telling them to take some over-the-counter medicines so that it helps with the symptoms. You're giving them instructions on how to take Advil or Tylenol in addition to that. You're doing something, you're intervening, and you're trying to make your patients and your customers feel better. And this, in 2020, it was like, no, there's no treatment, we can't treat you. And they even went so far as to telling you that treatments are dangerous. Hydroxychloroquine, all of a sudden was dangerous. Motrin was dangerous. You couldn't give it because it-
Vitamin N was dangerous?
Yeah, so Advil and Motrin, especially in Europe, because I had sent my son to school in Europe, but Advil, Motrin, ibuprofen was dangerous because there was a narrative that was saying that this was a vascular problem, and in large extent it is a vascular problem, but they weren't giving it to people because it increased your risk of bleeding, and so they didn't want to. If you got sick, they didn't want to give you any Advil. So it was just the pendulum. It was like it was just pegged. And it wasn't moving, and everything was dogma, everything coming from uh-huh. the the powers that be, the quote unquote experts, was just taking hook, line, and sinker. And I'm a cynic to begin with, as I told you back in 89, as a, you know, it's kind of where I, you know, started kind of having inklings. So that just, you know, this just didn't sit well for me. I'll give you an example. So I'm a plastic surgeon. I used to do a lot of breast reconstruction when I first came out of residency and practice. The analogy of not treating somebody that comes in that's having flu-like symptoms for a family practice, internal medicine, ER doc, you know, urgent care doctor, something like that, is the same analogy that somebody who goes in and gets a mammogram for ruling out or has a nodule or as a screening mechanism for breast cancer, and you see a spicule, you see something that's abnormal. The analogy is, well, don't do anything with that abnormality that we're seeing on the mammogram. Just wait till it erodes through your skin, and then we'll treat you. That's the same analogy. That's the same thing we're doing with these people. You know, don't, you know, you're not feeling very good. You've got a cough, you've got a fever. You know, you're having difficulty breathing when you're lying down. But you know, just you'll be okay. Just go home. And when you're really sick, call an ambulance or, you know, come on in here, drag yourself into the emergency room, and then we'll treat you. But only at that point will we treat you. And so it's the same.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, it was totally crazy.
Now, I want to jump ahead to last January, and then I want to get back into the story a little bit. There's a method to my madness here. Okay. What did they charge you with in January?
So I had,
you had a hearing.
Yeah, so January 11th, I had 11 or 12 officers, federal officers, show up from three different agencies, FBI, HHS and DHS show up in my office in a show of force, confiscated my phone and the phone of my office manager with a search warrant. And then a week later,
security was at your house.
No, they came to my house as well because my phone was here at my house. But they came to my office. So yeah, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, the OIG's Office of the Health and Human Services, and the FBI. Mm-hmm. You know, a task force. Of some sort. They showed up at my office, confiscated my phone, my office manager's phone. And then about a week later, I wake up to an email saying that we had been indicted because it was a screenshot from a reputation website saying, hey, we can help you with your reputation. But I never got served. Actually, I got served at the house. So my arraignment, I found out about my arraignment which was the 26th of January. So we're talking about the 11th and then the 18th. And then on the 26th, which was the following Thursday, I found out about the arraignment from the articles that were in the newspaper on the 17th and 18th that I was reading. I was scrambling looking for attorneys, didn't know where to go. This is not, you know, my typical bailiwick. I never been federally indicted before, so I didn't know where to go, calling friends and trying to get attorneys and talking to a number of attorneys and you know, just screening people, trying to, you know, figure out who was going to do what and how and everything else. I actually got served the day of my arraignment hearing, so I'm getting ready to go to my arraignment hearing, which I think was at 2 o'clock, and a FedEx envelope was dropped off at my door. I opened my door up, and there's a FedEx envelope there just leaning against my front door. Anyway, I picked that up, opened it up, and that was my indictment. Two of us, there's four people and one in my business entity. Mm-hmm. Two of the people have still not been served to this day. So we went to our arraignment with two of us having been served on the day of the hearing and two of us not having been served. So that was, you know, and so then we're going down that road of, you know, discovery. We're getting ready to submit some discovery on our part, asking questions of the government to produce some documents and data. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're at. It's a slow process. Our court hearing was originally April 4th, was April 4th. And then it's been pushed back to November 7th.
Have they actually stated what laws you've broken?
Yeah. So the three indictments are 18 U.S. Code 371, which is fraud, 18 U.S. Code 641 and 642. and I'll probably get these backwards, but I think 641 is kind of aiding and abetting, and 642 is conspiracy to commit fraud, I guess, aiding and abetting. And then 642 is counterfeiting.
Wow, counterfeiting, huh? I guess they're claiming fake vaccine cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't there have to be a victim for a fraud case?
Well, that's what I thought too. I get different answers depending on who you talk to. But yes, mm-hmm. I think the government is claiming that they were victimized because I allegedly threw out $25,000 worth of their product. So I guess that's where they're claiming the victim side of it is. But I didn't know that the government was the victim.
Yeah, exactly. They're the victim. And right. I read that the other part of it was that you sowed distrust against them. You must be a MAGA guy or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, they did say in the indictment that because of my political views, I had an agenda, and so I was trying to support that agenda. I mean, I don't know when it all of a sudden became when political views kind of interrupt your ethical and moral values as a physician to first do no harm.
Exactly. It doesn't.
I guess, right. So but you're right. It does say that in there.
That actually, it actually colors the prosecution as coming from the political spectrum.
Correct.
So, you know, that's actually important. Now, I said there was a method to my madness. Now, folks, we have this doctor that stood up for his patients and for his trouble. Can you imagine the Department of Homeland Security comes to your house? I'd be like, boys, you got something better to do? Like, you know, who's in charge of ISIS now? Go bother them. We're good here. He's actually got a fund to help fight this in court. It's at givesendgo.com/fight. That's the number 4. Moore, M-O-O-R-E, his last name. If you want to donate to his legal defense, this is a real American fighting the COVID fight for you. And that's something that we really can't take lightly these days. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thanks for that, now, George.
We're going to get into, okay, so we're into COVID. You got your patients coming in now. Where did this idea come from? Was it a patient? Was it you? And I might not be asking a correct, questions in the right direction with that one.
Well, look, all of this actually came from my patients. When we were shut down in March, early April of 2020, I started treating people. That was kind of the beginning. I started treating my staff, my friends, my family, myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't get sick, but I had medications for us. I was just treating people, taking care of them. They were just like we spoke about earlier, they were getting sent home sick, not feeling good. I knew about the Zelenko protocol, the FLCCC protocol. I don't remember exactly when that came out. That came out sometime in April or May. Mm-hmm. But I was treating people with hydroxychloroquine, azithromax, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D. I'd already used hydroxychloroquine for years, as I mentioned earlier as well. So I was comfortable with it. I knew it was working. And I was treating people. So high risk people, I'd put them on a prophylactic dose. And then the people that were sick, I would treat them. And that's how it started. People started calling me, and then their friends and family started calling me and saying, hey, you know, I heard you treated my ex-sister's brother-in-law's sister, you know? And, so I was doing all this, mostly just telemedicine, just talking to them on the phone, and taking care of them and calling in prescriptions for them. And then that just, again, morphed into taking care of sicker people that, again, didn't want to go into the hospital, didn't want to succumb to the ventilator remdesivir hospital protocol. So I was treating people at home and in my office, at their homes and in my office. So the old fashioned, house call doctor, with high dose steroids and various, interventions of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, like I said, steroids, vitamin C, vitamin D, anti-inflammatories, and everything else. And so, that just kind of kept carrying on. That was all through 2020, early 21 or end of 2020, when the 28-day study was supposedly out and it was 95% effective. People were looking to get vaccines and people were trying to figure out where they could go and get them. Over the course of the next few months, I signed up and became a vaccine clinic because I wasn't typically a vaccine clinic in my office. So I became a vaccine clinic through the Utah Health Department. Mm-hmm. People started coming to me for their vaccines.
Okay. And from there, now they're accusing you of tossing 2,000 COVID vaccine doses, giving kids saline shots, and that's 391 kids shots, 524 adult Pfizer shots, 64 Moderna shots, and 958 J&J shots between October 2021 and September 2022. Now, how did the vaccine card situation develop?
Well, when you order vaccines from the health department, they deliver a big package, and inside the package it has the vaccine from whatever manufacturer they had or we ordered. It also comes with syringes and needles, alcohol prep pads, and the vaccine cards. So it was a package that just came from the Utah Health Department.
Okay, and the kids needed the vaccine cards to go to school. Was that the deal?
Yeah, some kids were not allowed to go back to school, especially college kids couldn't go to school. People were not allowed to travel for their jobs. People were not allowed to go into the office for their jobs. Even remote people, IT tech people, would not have, they had to show, even though they were working remotely from their computer in their house or in their own office, the companies that they worked for or subcontracted with were requiring them to be vaccinated. Military personnel were required to be vaccinated, as you know, and especially, and then healthcare personnel. The biggest, to me, the biggest ones were the military, the healthcare personnel, the kids that, couldn't go back to school, and then people that needed to go in for medical procedures, whether they be somewhat elective, like maybe a knee scope or something like that. Mm-hmm. But even the real dramatic ones, which needed a kidney transplant or a liver transplant, they wouldn't even be put on the transplant list or were being taken off the transplant list if they were not vaccinated. So they would come into me and they would get a vaccine.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break. I want to pick it up here when we get back. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is TNT Talk Radio.
I'm Joel. De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
Well, isn't this special? Apparently, there is a red alert for a magnitude 9 mega earthquake off the Pacific coast as a crack has been discovered in the 600-mile fault at the bottom of the ocean. Now, this hole, just 50 miles off the coast of the United States state of Oregon, is spewing hot liquid that scientists warn could spark a magnitude 9 earthquake, and that, of course, would devastate the west coast of the United States. But here's my question. They discovered this because they saw it with some sonar. Basically, they were just snooping around the area. How many more of these are inputting water that is 16 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the surrounding water into the ocean in other places? And this is all part and parcel of this whole idea that I believe the warming of the ocean and the air is being caused by geothermal forcing. Let's just hope the earthquake doesn't go off. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The World Council for Health, WCH, a coalition of scientists, doctors, lawyers, and civil society advocacy organizations, opposes the World Health Organization, WHO's, pandemic treaty, expected to be ratified in 2024. The WCH considers the proposed WHO agreement is unnecessary and a threat to sovereignty and inalienable rights. It increases the WHO's power to declare unjustified pandemics, impose lockdowns, and enforce expensive, unsafe, and ineffective treatments against the will of the people. The WCH believes citizens have a right to participate in any agreement that affects their lives, livelihoods, and well-being. In addition, the WHO failed in approving the injurious H1N1 swine flu vaccine for a controversially declared pandemic. The WHO failed during the COVID-19 chapter as it encouraged lockdowns, suppressed early preventative treatments, and recommended product interventions that were neither safe nor effective. The WCH states the WHO cannot be allowed to control the world's health agenda, nor enforce biosurveillance while it is caught in a perpetual conflict of interest by accepting substantial funding from private interests that use their contributions to influence and profit from WHO decisions and mandates.
George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. We're with Dr. Kirk Moore, and we're talking about an act of heroism in the face of Anthony Fauci, Joe Biden, and DHS. I'm surprised they didn't have the FBI's HRT if they're going to bring DHS. I mean, why not come to your house with them, right? I mean, that's just crazy.
It started with two people, and then two more showed up, and then two more came in, and eventually my whole waiting room, which isn't very big, was filled with federal agents just sitting, some sitting and some standing around. It was a surgery day, it was a clinic day, but I was doing some minor procedures, and so I wasn't out in the front of the office, but I just didn't have a lot of patients there, so it wasn't as disruptive as it could have been, but 12 people in my waiting
room. That's good anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, it's been an interesting ride, George.
You didn't offer him lollipops, did you? I mean, I would have.
No. Hey, can I tell you a quick story though? So,
sure.
Speaking of an agent, and because obviously they knew who I was, they researched me, they knew about my background. They asked for my, I didn't have my phone at the office. I couldn't find it. It ended up being stuck between the seats of my car, but I thought it was at the house. We made plans to come back to my house, and the HHS agent, his name is Cody Collins. He and an FBI agent decided to follow me to my house, or at least meet me at my house. And I asked him, I said, "Do you guys know where I live?" And the one agent goes, Cody Collins looked at me and said, "Yeah, we know where you live." And I said, "Okay, well, then I'll just meet you there." And he goes, "Are you going to shoot me?" I'm just kind of like, what?
Wow.
If I'd have been really quick with it, I would have said, "Are you going to give me a reason to?" But yeah, it was just a really strange question.
Yeah, then HRT would have been at your house.
Yeah, yeah. But it was just a really strange question given the circumstance, because there was absolutely no hint of violence. There was no, it wasn't super confrontational. I mean, as non-confrontational as it can be to have, federal agents in your office asking to, you to relinquish your cell phone. But still, it was just, there was no, that we weren't yelling at each other. We weren't even talking to each other. But the first thing he says to me, he says, "Are you going to shoot me?" I was just like, okay.
That's just crazy.
Right.
That's phishing, by the way. God. Wow.
Yes.
Now, when you were beginning this, okay, you started giving the vaccine cards and not the shots. How did this spread around? Were your patients just talking to each other? This guy's on our side. He's going to help us out. I mean, was it that kind of thing?
Well, I had George. I got to be careful about what I say. I'm not admitting anything.
Understandably.
So, but yeah, it was. I was not advertising anything. I was not looking to get more people in my office. And you know, it was my, you know, my friends, my staff, telling people that we were now a vaccine clinic and could provide that service for them. So I'm sure that at some point I was listed on the Utah Health Department website as a vaccine provider. So there may have been some people that were coming in, from or looking me up online and finding me there. But it was not something that I was out there seeking to provide a service for somebody, not the way I advertise for breast augmentations or liposuction or tummy tuck.
Right.
It was not something that was, you know, prominent, and it wasn't even listed on my website. So.
Now, are your patients standing up for you at all right now?
They are. You know, truth be told, it's, I think there's some nervousness, on their part for, you know, because of what happened in the Canadian trucker thing where you find out who donated to so-and-so's campaign. So I think there's some fear on their part for being outed as donating to my campaign, and then losing your livelihood or losing your license or whatever. So again, the politics side of it. The amount of public support, whether it be on the social media sites or whether it be in articles that are posted or phone calls that I get to my office. In the first week or 10 days of this, the indictment becoming public, it was 99-1. I think there were two total phone calls that we had that were people like, hey, he belongs in jail, you know, good for him, you know, because he endangered the rest of society by not, you know, injecting people with get. Some people claiming some people claiming that I had that I had given kids so like that lady in Germany that gave saline shots instead of the vaccines, like over 9,600 or 8,600 or something like that. She was giving saline shots instead of the vaccines. That, you know, that nurse was doing it without the knowledge of their patients, of the patients. So those people thinking, you know, those people that were coming in were just getting a saline shot. And I'm not saying that I gave saline or didn't give saline. I'm just saying that nobody in my office came in and got something that we didn't agree that that they wanted, right, based upon total informed consent and, you know, and an explanation of what the risks and benefits were.
Now, you know, consider a few months ago, I had a Pfizer exec on. We did a long interview, and it was a very blunt interview. And we talked about how COVID was no more or less dangerous than every other flu that's come up for the last 200 years. There was nothing spectacular about it. The mortality rate's the same. The sickness rate's the same. The transfer rate's the same. Everything, you know, same. Now, COVID is a little different, but all the factors that anyone would care about aren't just similar, they're the same. There was nothing pandemic-y and dangerous, overly dangerous about it until they started making it overly dangerous. And I'm saying, well, okay, well, I said, how different is it from, you know, the flu from last year and the year before? He goes, oh, no real difference. So I'm like, okay, what are we doing here? Why not just give last year's flu vaccine if that's the case? Well, we got a vaccine. And he said, he was point blank. He said, look, what drove this was the political. And all these policymakers, and the politicians were the ones that drove this. He said, we were just on a train like everybody else.
Wow.
And yeah, that's actually on the TNT website. If you dig that interview up, that's what he talks about. Very, very blunt. So if that's the case, that's why I'm saying we're looking at defrauding the government.
Right.
Who'd you defraud? Nancy Pelosi?
Right.
Come on. Are they, what are they? How heavily invested are they in these vaccine manufacturers? Yeah, I mean, well, that would be the only people you defrauded.
They're the largest lobbyist on Capitol Hill. All right. They are the largest. They supply 70% of the mainstream media budget. And they fund medical school education. They're funding residency programs for teaching physicians and nurses and everybody else, kind of like the traditional, quote unquote, traditional medicine route, which includes all of the, petrochemicals and all of the current paradigms of how you need to take care of people. And it's a total travesty. It's just a total capture of, A to Z right now. And I don't know how we fix it.
Yeah. We're going to need to though. Because if we don't, is this going to happen again?
I guarantee it's going to happen again. I mean, there's already inklings out there. I mean, they tried to do it. They tried to scare the public with the monkeypox thing. They've tried with Marburg, saying that there were, 12 cases of Marburg down in Guinea or something like that. In Papua New Guinea, there were people in the ICU with this Marburg virus. They're still putting out things about Marburg on the World Health Organization website and the CDC website. It's just a matter of how many people can they scare again this time? And how can they go about doing it? You mentioned this earlier. John Ioannidis he's one of the greatest epidemiologists, the most published epidemiologist in the history of epidemiology and medicine. And he said the exact same things that of the statistics that you quoted to that Pfizer exec, that this, the infection fatality rate and the case fatality rate, and just the number of cases of this disease were exactly the same as any other flu bug that we've ever had in the history of our society, as far as back as we can count and look at from the time we started collecting data. And I want to say it's 0.001% or 0.01% or something like that was the case fatality rate of this disease in the, obviously different for eight different age groups, but on the whole spectrum from 0 to 85 or whatever the number is, the case fatality rate and the infection fatality rate were exactly the same as for any other flu.
We've got 1 minute left, and I want to remind people, if you want to support Dr. Kirk Moore's legal fund, it's givesendgo.com/fight4MOORE. Dr. Moore, thank you for coming on today.
Hey, George, you stay safe over there, okay? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.